We can do some stuff tomorrow too. We don't have to do it. We can knock out.
Every call is posted on Leading Age Massachusetts website. We will put that address in the chat room. So if you've missed any previous calls and want to go back and listen to them, you can. I'm going to turn over to Lynn to talk for about 2 seconds about technology, because I know you guys are Zoom experts now, and wish we all brought stock in it at one point or another. But Lynn, can you just share how people can ask questions and unmute themselves and other things like that?
Sure. Thanks, Emily. So the default for this meeting, for coming into this meeting, is to be muted. So if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you will need to unmute yourself. For those on your computer, you'll simply click the microphone button to unmute and then click it again to remute. For those on the phone, you'll need to press *6 in order to unmute, and same for remuting. We do ask that you remute yourself after you've made your comment, just to reduce background noise. For those who are interested, the chat box is available on those on the computer to submit questions, and we have multiple folks who are monitoring that. If if you don't have access to the chat box, you're welcome to send me an email. My email address is lmonaghan@leadingagema.org.
Thanks, Lynn. Before we get started, I also just want to give a chance to my partner agencies to say hello to everybody. So David Ng from Mass Housing.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks to you and to the folks at Leading Age for convening these calls. Really appreciate you and everyone joining with us today. And thanks to Ruth and Amy for all the great information that they're going to share. In particular, thanks to Ruth, because this is the second time I've asked her to do a presentation like this recently. So thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Dave. And Sarah Barkin from CDEC.
Hi, everybody. Sarah Barkin, Director of Housing Development at CDAC. And I continue to be so grateful for Emily and Leading Age and the state partners for organizing these calls, which were happening weekly in the earlier days of the pandemic. They've been an incredible learning experience for me. And I hope they have proven to be a good way for people in this field to both come together and learn from experts and share information about how you are all serving elders during this continuing difficult time. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. And Amy Stitely from the Department of Housing and Community Development.
Hi, everyone. I'm looking forward to sharing some more information with you about the Baker-Polito administration's eviction diversion initiative. Thank you for offering this platform, Leading Age, Elder Affairs, to get the word out to so many important housers like yourself out there.
Great. We're going to hear from Amy later a lot more. So before we get started, if you have any questions, as you heard, you can put them in the chat room. We will also be putting links and resources in the chat room. If you have called in, you can follow. We will also be sending information out through our listserv. Our listserv has about 500 people on it. If you are not currently on the listserv and would like to join, you can email seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. And I'll say that again, seniorhousingcovid19, all one word, @mass.gov. That's also a place you can send questions, or if you have things you'd like to share, you can send it to that address. So we will be sending the materials out later through the listserv, and also putting links in the chat room as well. So we are pleased to have with us two presenters today who are going to talk about the same issue, which is housing insecurity, and what programs and resources exist for people who might be facing hardships with their housing, either due to loss of income and pandemic-related issues. But first, we're going to actually hear about a program that's been around for a while before the pandemic called the Tenancy Preservation Program. And this program is offered across the state for people who are struggling to maintain their housing due to something related to their behavior or their disability. And Tenancy Preservation Program providers come in and help with that situation. So we're going to hear first from Ruth Harrell Garvey, from Bay Cove, and she is the program director of the Tenancy Preservation Program. She is going to talk, and we also have some slides we're going to put up. So let's make sure the slides are there. Perfect. All right, Ruth, if you want to unmute yourself, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for asking me, or in Dave's case, telling me, just kidding, to be here today. It looks like there's some folks that are familiar with the program, and maybe there's some folks that aren't. So I'm going to structure this in a way as if I'm telling you about it for the folks that are less familiar. There might be some opportunities for questions. I'm gonna let the folks running this meeting kind of triage that, but anything that is not addressed today, my contact information will be up. Emily has it, Dave has it, et cetera. Please feel free to contact me with any questions and after the meeting, if it wasn't addressed during the meeting, and if it's something that I personally can't assist you with, I certainly will put you in touch with the right person. So the first slide, next slide, please. Thank you. So TPP is at this point is a statewide program. So in every city or town, there is both housing court coverage and tenancy preservation program coverage. There are different providers. We do have some information to you to figure out who is the provider in your area. And as I already said, if you're not sure, I'd be happy to help you navigate. So TPP itself is a homeless prevention program, but it's specific under what we think about as reasonable accommodation, that the individual or family being served is dealing with disabilities, health disorders, sometimes complex health needs, and that the behaviors related, the least violation behaviors related to the disability or impairment or health condition. As I stated, TPP consults with the Massachusetts Housing Court. Some of the TPP programs have space in the housing courts. Some might be both hybrid, both work in offices and in the court, and some might travel to the courts during the pandemic. As the courts start to reopen, TPP is available both by Zoom, audio calls. The housing courts have virtual desk times and also sometimes in the courthouse. We also have another component, which is the upstream that's been going for a few years now. And this is an opportunity that we all love, which is to basically diversion from court and to work with folks to prevent court involvement. Next slide, please. Thank you. So, just to build on that a little bit more, the TPP staff take a look not just at what the issue is, whether it be non-payment, conditions, behavior, but assess further the reasons for the eviction, the alleged lease violation, and then what contributing underlying disability, health issues, et cetera, are contributing to that, develop a plan to address that, whether it's identifying needed services, services that are in place but need to be revamped, relooked at, referring for services. And those are some of the components in the service plan that's developed to maintain the tenancy. And the services tend to be more on the short-term side with kind of a handoff to more long-term providers once the household is a little more stabilized. We can vary that on a case-by-case basis statewide. When the cases are in court, TPP does make regular reports to parties involved in the case. And of course, this would be the court, property owner, the tenant, and also the other kind of housing related folks, such as the resident service coordinators, the advocates, the other service providers that are also addressing in any way housing and housing stability. And then if the tenancy cannot be preserved, TPP will work with existing providers and resources to facilitate referrals to other agencies, look for a soft landing, see if there's a way to offer other transition services with the always the goal of preventing homelessness. Next slide, please. Excuse me, thank you. So in general, the eligibility for TPP services is, as I said, this is a program specifically for folks that someone in the household has a disability and an impairment, a behavioral health disorder, a complex medical condition. Sometimes we might just in general look at impairments and see kind of dig a little deeper around that, which have resulted in behavior that is violating something around the lease. For folks that are upstream, we don't need to have always a notice to quit. We can accept folks at the notice to quit level, but we're looking for a lease violation. And I know I hear it from the other providers as well. And we're also very proud in the Boston, Metro Boston area that most of our upstream referrals come from housing providers. So it's really a beautiful collaboration. The most important part, particularly as we've seen the different layers of the pandemic, which really bring this more to kind of something to be very mindful of, is that we are a tenancy preservation program. So the tenancy has to be sustainable. For the area that the program I work for covers, that unfortunately means that a lot of the households we work with are in some kind of a subsidy, just given that the market rents are so high. But we can work with all types of tenancies as long as they're viable. That we cannot do anything in our kind of traditional TPP and upstream model to address an unaffordable rent, unfortunately. But it also does remind all of us, as we all know, why it's so important to stabilize and preserve the, you know, the housing stock that is affordable. And then, of course, we bring out our magic wands, as you all do, and do the very best we can to, you know, buy engagement from the household members. If there is a direct nexus between a violation and a disability or an impairment, but the tenant or tenants are unwilling to participate in a plan to address the violations, there's not, that has to be part of the eligibility. And certainly we all try the best we can to, you know, work to have folks be engaged, stay engaged, motivated, you know, use the skills and tools in our toolbox, as you all do as well. And then lastly, the landlord or the court must agree to delay the eviction proceedings while TPP works with the household. Those are for our court cases. And then sometimes, you know, we can get agreements in place and things of that sort. But certainly that the landlord has to be on board and or influenced by the court to preserve the tenancy. And then we do also provide consultation and referral services for anybody that we're able to. So I always do encourage folks to just reach out if you're not sure. We can figure it out together if this looks like a TPP eligible case or if there's any consultation services that any of the TPP staff can provide to you. Next slide, please. Thank you. So as I mentioned, for every city and town in Massachusetts, there is a housing court division that covers that city or town. For example, there's some of them listed below. For every housing court division, there is a nonprofit provider of the TPP program. So you have the providers listed below. The second down is the program that I'm representing today. Bay Cove Human Services TPP program, and we're with the Eastern Housing Court, which prior to the expansion of the housing court was thought of as the Boston Housing Court, which now covers Boston and many other cities and towns. Next slide, please. We have, thank you. We have a little bit of we're just going to touch a tiny bit on some housing court information. This was from some presentations we've been doing in collaboration with the housing court, but as you've all heard, the moratorium has been lifted and the housing court is super busy right now, but there will be some contact information and or you can contact me and I will help you navigate. So the housing court is led by Chief Justice Timothy Sullivan and Deputy Court Administrator, Benjamin Odinyenka. The housing court has 15 judges, covers all 14 counties of the Commonwealth, and there are being additional judges sworn in to address the additional cases that we anticipate and have seen so far. And as you saw in the previous slide, there's six divisions: Central, Eastern, Metro South, Northeast, Southeast, and Western. But the important thing to keep noting is that it covers the entire state of Massachusetts. Next slide, please. For the city or town that you live in, and the city or town that the people that you're working with and providing services to live in, there's both the ability for landlords to file cases in housing court or in district court, or for example, in Boston Municipal Court. We strongly advocate that cases go to housing court because it's a specialty court. And in addition to landlord-tenant disputes, such as evictions, they also do small claims, injunctions, which has been continued through entire pandemic and can be initiated by a tenant or a landlord. And then a couple of other things such as receivership, state sanitary code, building court enforcement, and criminal citations. Next slide, please. So the housing court has the following resources. The housing specialist department, which TPP works extremely closely with, the lawyer for the day program, and both TPP and the housing court itself are versed in referrals to agencies that can assist. And I just love the housing specialist department. I'm speaking on their behalf today, but they are all trained mediators. They give procedural advice, alternative dispute resolution. They make referrals, and if needed, they can view a property if there's a dispute. And with some of the changes with the moratorium being lifted, the increase in mediation for all cases that come to housing court has increased exponentially. Next slide. This is a little bit of information. If you have, if you're working with a tenant and the case was not filed in housing court, it can be transferred. I'm not gonna get too much into that, but if we can go to the next slide. Here's really important for you in terms of links. So if you have housing court specific questions, which again, I just very broadly touched on today. This is the website for you. And then also very importantly, a link for all the TPP providers throughout the state. And again, my contact information, which I welcome you to go ahead and contact me. That is the end of today's very brief overall presentation, predominantly on the existing TPP program.
Ruth, thank you so much. I'm going to ask you just a few questions, if possible, if my dog will stop barking. The first question is, well, actually, this is more of a statement, which is, I happen to know that TPP is incredibly successful and that you have over 90% success rate at keeping people housed, either in their existing apartment or helping them move somewhere else. So I just want people to know that's one of the reasons we're highlighting TPP. But what if I'm not sure, what if I'm a houser and I'm just not sure that my person would be eligible? What do I do?
You contact either myself or if you feel comfortable, the TPP contact. And again, the website is we're all looking at right now for those of us that have access to a screen. And we figure it out. All of the TPP providers communicate with each other, triage cases together. We'll figure it out together. And then sometimes we have these kind of gray areas and we all work together to figure out the best next step.
And is there a waiting list, or how does that work?
That fluctuates program to program. You might have a drop in staffing, or sometimes we get additional resources but haven't hired yet. traditionally, there's most of the programs have had at least minimally a small wait list. And I think this is reflective of two things. One being that the need is there, the need is great. And the second being that sometimes to engage the tenants in a prevention plan would almost be a full-time job, and we have to triage that a little bit. But most of the programs historically and currently have a bit of a wait list.
Got it. We're going to go ahead and post your contact information and the links to the housing court and the statewide map in the chat for folks who can't see the slides. So we'll go ahead and do that. Are there any questions that folks want to ask in the chat? Just to let you know, the next person who's going to be talking is also going to be talking about a newer initiative, but also around housing insecurity. So, all right. So I think, Ruth, if you want to just stand by, we're going to switch presenters, but my guess is that they're going to be questions for you at the end as well. So thank you, Ruth. And now we're going to move to Amy Stightley, who's the Chief of Programs at the Department of Housing and Community Development. And the, as she mentioned earlier, the administration is concerned about the housing stability of the citizens due to the pandemic and due to sometimes due to loss of income. So she's going to tell you about a new initiative that has just launched and the components of it and how to access it for if you have people you're working with who are in these situations. So Amy, can you go ahead and take it away?
I will jump right in.
And I think we're going to share your slides, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So let me just get my slide deck up and hit from the top. And also just thank you all again for listening to me. It's very important information as people who are related to the housing profession, whether it's the affordable housing or your regular market rate housing, your tenant advocate, a lawyer, a social worker. This is all important information for you. So I believe, it's been about 10 days since we announced the Eviction Diversion Initiative. And so I'm going to go through that. It's at $171 million initiative. That's the funding allocated by the administration the entirety of the programs, including an expansion of the TPP program through the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30th, by the state. So I'm going to go through an overview of all the pieces that are in it. And then talk about the funding and how the implementation is working. So this is a very busy slide. And by the way, the slide deck will be emailed around as a PDF for those of you who want to study later and print it out. But it really shows sort of the ecosystem thinking, the systems thinking about how things will work now that the state moratorium on evictions and foreclosures has ended as of October 17th. So you might have seen driving around, if you have been driving, I don't drive, but some highway variable message signs, VMS signs flashing that say, need help paying your rent, call 211. So that is one very visible example of how we are doing a public awareness campaign about resources that are available. So Mass 211 is what we're calling a great caller front door for those who don't maybe have access to the internet or maybe just don't know where to start when they're facing a housing situation. And they have a lot of information about DHCD, whether it's related to shelter, rehousing, applying for subsidized housing, or what we believe is a lot of people's situation right now, inability to pay their rent or mortgage. In addition, we have a set of flyers that promote 211 and calling for assistance in multiple languages that is accessible on our website, which is www.mass.gov/COVID-housing-help. And I'll put that out there anyway. And a lot of frequently asked questions to help people on that website. And we really just want to get the word out. There's even a short video on that website. We're pushing things out on social media so that there's general awareness out there in the Commonwealth that if you cannot pay your rent or your mortgage, there may be options for you. So there is, aside from 211, there exist 9 housing consumer education centers who also act as a form of a front door for people in housing crisis. And they are often who 211 will refer to in order to access resources, whether those are rental assistance program like RAFT or IRMA. I'm in the center of the box here. Those are programs where if you are income eligible, you could get assistance with paying your rent. Or sometimes there are rental assistance programs similar to RAFT or IRMA that are not the state programs, but are funded by a municipality or a foundation or a church. And often the Housing Consumer Education Centers will have an idea about all those resources. In addition, we are adding some new services called community mediation. There's an expansion of the upstream TPP program and also expanding the access to legal services. So everything in blue on this slide, for those of you who can see it, is a new or an expanded part of the initiative, and everything in black existed already. So the idea with all of this is to try to get to that landlord-tenant agreement that will preserve the tenancy. Now, I know many of you are housing managers out there who already work on those types of agreements, repayment agreements, without necessarily even involving some of these other resources I just mentioned, the rental assistance, the legal services, the community mediation or TPP. And I just wanna say thank you for that and for doing your part out there to work with your tenants and tenants. Thank you for talking to your property managers and trying to make those agreements even before we get to the point where we need a lawyer, a mediator, a TPP provider or extra resources. So as mentioned earlier by Ruth, the courts themselves are also at this moment in time strongly suggesting mediation. So they have changed their processes so that the first day in court is not like a speed rush into a trial. It's a sit down, discussion of the facts, a suggestion to maybe involve some of that alternative dispute resolution or mediation and try to get to that landlord-tenant agreement. Now, sometimes that won't be possible, and then the trial would happen at the next day in court. But anyway, it gives a second opportunity once tenant and landlord have entered the court process to try and reach that agreement that I mentioned. Now we understand, however, that not every tenancy will be preserved, that the landlord and tenant may not be able to reach that agreement either before or during court, no matter how much TPP is involved or how much RAFT or rental assistance is left on the table. And in that case, we have also expanded our homelessness prevention or diversion programs. Home base is the big one for the state. And then there's some new programs called the Strategic Prevention Initiative and the METAR program, which I will describe later, but those are all about rapidly rehousing tenants who would otherwise enter the family shelter system in Massachusetts. So the idea is like you start with a lot of awareness on one end of the side, the left side of the screen. You do as much interventions as we can to prevent the court filing and what Ruth called the upstream or pre-court process. And then after the court process, there are some programs to help folks who are being forced to leave their home. So I already talked about our media campaign. Here's the website again. And you know, it's not just for renters. There's also information for those who might be homeowners and some of the rights homeowners have under the CARES Act to defer or get a forbearance on their mortgage. And so there's some information there. And it's also some information for landlords. So I talked about the Housing Consumer Education Centers. Their phones, along with the 211 phone line, are ringing off the hooks this week. As you know, Monday was the first workday after the expiration of the moratorium. So they got a boost in funding to hire more staff to respond to those calls, and also to hire something called a special housing counselor, or I think we might be calling it a special services coordinator, who can help guide those who need more than just a referral and check with you later, but more a bit of handholding through the process to try and package, you know, a set of services that might be uniquely needed for that tenant, whether it's a little TPP, a little legal support, or some mediation, all three. So they'll be hiring temporarily some, I guess, I wouldn't call them case managers, but service coordinators who will help those who need it get through the process and access the new services and the initiative. So this is a slide about the RAFT program, Residential Assistance for Families in Transition. I won't assume that most of you know what it is. It's a program that exists in the state budget, normally provides up to $4,000 in assistance with rent, mortgage, utilities, or moving costs. The eligibility is 50% area median income or 60% area median income if experienced domestic violence. That program is still running in the background with the Eviction Diversion Initiative. We have an upstream component and we also have a court component. And that has been happening all along. So what's new in the expansion of RAFT is that we are creating a landlord application door into RAFT for landlords who have 20 or fewer units. They can't submit the application without tenant consent, though. In fact, you cannot access funds to RAFT without both the tenant and the landlord agreeing that they want to use the RAFT program to preserve the tenancy. So in addition, back in June or July, when the supplemental budget was signed, the legislature inserted language that allowed the benefit level to go up from $4,000 to $10,000 under certain conditions for those who were experiencing a hardship financially due to COVID-19. The eligibility is more or less the same. RAFT is the largest portion of the eviction diversion budget. It's $100 million of the $171 million that I mentioned before, and is kind of a key platform underlying everything. So how does this expanded benefit work? Basically, I'm going to simplify it as much as possible. If you were impacted by COVID-19 and you're having trouble paying your rent, then you can access up to $10,000 so long as the tenant and landlord will enter an agreement that stabilizes the tenancy for a minimum of 6 months. And if there are children, school-age children in the household, through June 2021. So we understand that in order to make this happen, sometimes the landlord may have to forgive some arrears or reduce some rent during that period of guarantee. The tenant will have to pay at least 30% of their income towards any forward rent stipends, is what we call them, when RAFT is paying not just rent that is owed, but rent for the months moving forward. And then it's kind of going to be a little bit of sliding up and down. How much does the tenant pay? How much does the landlord forgive? In some magic sweet spot cases, nobody will have to give too much more than they are comfortable with. And the RAA, sorry, the regional administering agency, who actually works on behalf of DHCD to distribute these funds and check eligibility, will be able to get that agreement signed. And that agreement will hopefully keep people out of court and safely housed. Now, in the case where the landlord and tenant cannot reach an agreement, but they want to, but it's going to take maybe a few more days and some more listening, negotiating, talking to each other. There will be an option to refer the applicants to community mediation. different than court mediation because that is offered by the housing court specialists that were mentioned by Ruth. These will be mediators that can serve people before they even get to court. So that's a new program, community mediation. And the idea is exactly as I said, make mediation available before people get to court. And there are 12 mediation centers that are funded by the state and court trained and approved. In fact, some of them already do some work for the courts, but they're all gonna be expanded to serve on housing related and eviction related issues. Right now, I think only like 3 out of the 12 existing centers that cover the entire state are equipped for that. So they will be ramping up and expanding their volunteer mediator program, and everyone will be trained to mediate housing and eviction issues. In addition, there's going to be a large expansion of legal services accessible to both tenants and landlords who meet income requirements. It definitely would be a lawyer if it was a court situation, but it could be somebody who is not quite a lawyer, maybe a paralegal or a social worker or somebody who knows the laws very well, who could be serving tenants or landlords before court. The idea is that this will be also available statewide, and referrals would also come from the Housing Consumer Education Center to 1-1, possibly TPP providers and mediators. This is a major expansion. There, the existing legal aid services that have been available pre-pandemic and now continue to exist, this is just really ramping up that availability to a much larger scale across the state. So I'm going to take a break here and ask David Ng of Mass Housing to talk about how the TPP program that was just described by Ruth is going to be expanded under this initiative.
Sure. Thanks, Amy. As Ruth alluded to, one of my roles in Mass Housing is to manage and oversee the statewide operations for TPP. And so we've been working with DHCD and the governor's office on an expansion of the program to loosen the program requirements around the disability piece that Ruth really emphasized in her presentation. So moving forward with this expanded COVID response TPP, we are really trying to work with anyone who has some barriers in accessing the services and resources that are available, with paying particular attention to EA eligible families and low-income seniors. And I think that last piece, the low-income seniors, is really important for this the folks in this call, obviously. So really, if you have folks who you think need access to all of the services and resources that Amy has been talking about, they really have some barriers in access, you should give Ruth and the other folks who were listed in the resource information, give them a call and they will talk with you. The programs aren't staffed up yet, but they will do their best in directing you to how to access services. And we're hoping that in the next couple of months, there will be staff up and running in each of the programs statewide.
Great. So as David mentioned, major staffing effort for all of this. So here are those rapid rehousing programs, homeless prevention programs, particularly aimed at, David used the word EA, it says EA all over this. This is emergency assistance, that's the state-funded family shelter program. Largely these programs are about diverting from the state family shelter program. Homebase offers up to $10,000 per household to divert from shelter or homelessness. It could be after an eviction or before, just when somebody is very imminently facing a housing crisis and near homelessness. The Strategic Prevention Initiative is a small program. It offers a little bit less funding, $3,000 per household, but you don't have to be determined EA eligible to access you, even though it is targeted to EA eligible families, you wouldn't have to wait for that determination to get that funding. And it's particularly focused in some high impact areas, Worcester, Lawrence, Springfield, Boston, and Brockton. And then the METAR program is actually a program that was a temporary program used during Hurricane Maria to divert from shelter and homelessness. It also, like Homebase, provides up to $10,000 per household. Like the Strategic Prevention Initiative, you could access it without having to be determined EA eligible or family shelter eligible. So in terms of the funding, I mentioned the $171 million. $100 million is the lion's share is going towards RAFT, then followed by about $48.7 million going to the rehousing initiatives, $12 million approximately to the legal services program that we discussed, $3.8 total, that includes the existing line item, other mass housing funds that they access, and the expansion under the diversion initiative to the TPP program, and then $6.5 million for those housing consumer education centers. How are we paying for this? We're using CARES Act, Coronavirus Relief Funds, some of DHCD's own CARES Act funds, including our Community Development Block Grant funds, and some of our Moving to Work Section 8 CARES funds. And how will this all happen with the timing? So yes, the courts have reopened. My understanding is that they have been scheduling cases and that there are not been any hearings or trials this week. That might start next week or the week after. You know, the RAFT program continues to exist, as does the TPP program, as do the Housing Consumer Education Centers. So I just want to emphasize that, as does the Homebase program, it's not like nothing is there. What I'm saying is there are resources there today to serve folks who are facing a risk of eviction. All these expansions require staffing up and recruitment, including the TPP program, and they will be building their capacity between now and I'd say the middle of December. So that by the time January comes, everything will be operating at full scale. And as these programs continue to build and go live, we'll keep updating our partners and through Leading Age and also Elder Affairs as new things continue to evolve. I mentioned January 1st because there is another moratorium in place, the CDC's eviction moratorium. Came into, actually took effect the day that the Massachusetts moratorium ended on Saturday, but it is different than the Massachusetts moratorium. In this case, the renter has to provide a special form called a declaration by the CDC to their landlord that asserts that they fit the criteria to be covered. There's income criteria that's quite high. It's about $100,000 for a single tax filing household, about $200,000 for a joint filing household. Have to say that they have tried and made best attempts to secure all government funding to pay their rent. They have to be making their best attempts to pay their rent as well, partial rent, at risk of homelessness or doubling up or in unsafe situation. And have lost their income or been impacted by COVID-19. So all of that has to be true, and the tenant has to sign the declaration and give it to their landlord to be protected under this moratorium. However, under this moratorium, you can still go to court, and the court will have a hearing and maybe even process the eviction. What cannot happen is the tenant will not be removed from the home until January 1st. So the courts are actually, I guess, sorting or classifying cases between those that have the CDC moratorium declaration and those that do not, because they will be treated differently. I think I'm going to stop there. There's some other slides that just say more of the same with different graphs for people who understand things differently. But this presentation, which is quite dense, will be available and emailed as a PDF to everyone who's attended.
Thank you so much, Amy. This is a lot of information, and thanks so much to the administration for scrambling to put this together. I think there were a couple of questions. One is, and you sort of talked to us about a little bit, you know, these are great efforts to help people from stop becoming homeless. They may or may not always help, meaning there might be situations where people become homeless and people are concerned that the homeless population will grow. And is there, you know, can you spend a little bit more time on the new programs and what the rapid rehousing means and how you're thinking about this from the position of once somebody is in shelter, you know, how are we, the shelters we know are full. So what are we doing to help the homeless people so that that population doesn't grow?
So I think the 48 million is meant to rehouse or people who are in shelter or divert them from having to enter shelter. With the benefits, whether it's home-based, METAR, or strategic prevention initiative funds. And the idea is to try and not prevent the population from growing that is homeless. That said, we also have, under separate initiative, all our emergency solution grant funding that is going toward shelter expansion and shelter operations throughout the state, which is a little bit different. It assumes that these shelters need support and need expanded assistance, and that's supported also with FEMA. I'm not the expert on that, and we could bring somebody in on that topic, but I just wanted to let you know that what I've showed you today is just really about diversion from eviction, and not really about the shelter system.
Thanks. So TPP in the new and TPP we heard about existing. I think there's a question. Let's punt this one to Ruth first. So for the existing TPP program, not as modified as Amy said. So since there's a wait list, we had people talk about it. Since there's a wait list, what happens? Like, do you triage? Do people with an urgent case get above, or is it sort of date and time? So Ruth, can you answer that? And then I guess, how is it gonna change moving forward under the eviction diversion initiative?
Well, I don't know if it's gonna change. I think there's a lot of unknowns moving forward, but yeah, it's absolutely a triage. I think that the waitlist is typically when we, from the program that I work with, I can't speak for the other programs, but I suspect that this is true across the board, is when we cannot get the tenant to engage. So, non-payments are some examples. That has been a little bit exacerbated during this pandemic with people saying, I need to spend more and I can't, I'm not even gonna pay my subsidized rent. And the other maybe example that people might be familiar with is conditions in the household, maybe hoarding, things like that kind of thing. But we do circle back to the wait list. But yes, this is a program of triage for sure. But the folks that are not, and there's some component across all the programs for kind of answering in the order received. To the best of our ability, in terms of being fair and answering everyone, even folks that are not eligible, and doing a lot of consultation. But we don't just create a wait list and walk away from it. We keep coming back to it. So it's a combination of triage and revisiting.
And if I could just add to what Ruth said, I think the programs also consider where the tenant is in the eviction process. And so those cases that are perhaps in a trial in front of a judge, those cases get prioritized above cases that are maybe at the very beginning notice to quit stage, really. So we are sort of emphasizing, really looking at the cases that are the most at immediate risk.
Great, thank you. So Amy, there were two questions that came in about RAFT, and I know you answered one of them, but maybe we can tell it to the whole group. So the first question is, can you use RAFT in public housing? And how would that work?
Definitely can. However, the RAFT agency will require that the tenant request a rent adjustment. And in state public housing, we passed an emergency reg that it's required to do even retroactive rent adjustments during the COVID-19 crisis. So in theory, the rent adjustment should be able to take care of a large number of the issues. However, if there are extenuating circumstances, RAFT will come in, but only for arrears, because the forward payment really should be covered by the rent adjustment, because people are paying a percentage of their income towards rent in public housing.
And is that the same in public housing as it is in private subsidized housing?
Any housing where the rent is based on the income. So there is some subsidized housing where that's not the case. So not the case, only for those tenants where the rent is based on the income.
Okay. And you talked a little bit about what about if, so there's a landlord commitment.
Sure.
If the landlord receives the RAFT funds on behalf of a resident and they commit not to evict for that time period, but the resident fails to comply with their part, can the landlord then file for eviction?
All right. So the agreement is an agreement where both parties have to uphold their pieces. So it says how much the tenant is going to pay, says how much the landlord is going to forgive or reduce by any amount, and how long the tenancy will be paid, and exactly how many months RAFT will cover. Now, if there's a different type of lease violation that's not related to the payment, of course, that's not related to the RAFT agreement. It's really about the payment of the rent. If the tenant doesn't pay their share of the rent, of course, then the agreement doesn't hold anymore. The normal recourses of action would still stand. However, if the tenant did pay within the 14-day notice to quit period, then the RAFT agreement would be reinstated.
And what if the landlord won't agree to adjust the rent? You said this is a partnership, the landlord and
right.
the person, and the landlord doesn't want to do their part.
So if we can't get to the 6 months or the June 2021, that higher benefit level is not accessible. So
but the lower benefit level is.
But the lower benefit level okay. is still accessible at all times. So the 4,000 up to 4,000 is accessible before, after court, before, after they couldn't get to the 6 month agreement. It's accessible to the tenant to also move if after an eviction. It is also a rehousing benefit, or it's also accessible to folks who are doubled up or homeless, that $4,000. So there's a lot more flexibility on the existing RAFT program for the types of situation as just. For us, the expanded benefit is really about getting those months of stability.
Okay, we have one more question. If the landlord option applies for landlords have 20 or less units, is that per property or portfolio?
Portfolio. So this is really meant to be, I guess what we call a small landlord is kind of option. And the reason being is if there's a property owner who's either, you know, who owns 20 or more units, we're starting to get to pretty high multi-million dollars worth of assets and ownership. And it's just, they don't necessarily need this special access backdoor into RAFT, and it's not an automatic. I mean, even if the landlord fills out the application, if the tenant doesn't want to stay in the unit, then it doesn't go anywhere. Both tenant and landlord have to agree.
Emily, you're muted.
Sorry about that. So can a family member apply on behalf of a household if the head of household passed away? Can you apply for RAFT still for who's left in the household?
The head of household needs to apply, whomever that is. And all adult family members in the household have to sign the application.
So okay. Can I just jump in? So that might be a referral to a program like TPP to work with the housing provider around seeing if the remaining household members could be, if there's someone who could become the head of household, make sure the rent is correctly, you know, all those pieces, do collaboratively with whoever is involved with the housing provider or the subsidy if it's through one of the administrating agencies, and then apply to RAFT.
So there's one last question, and I actually, it gives me a chance to plug something. The question was, are there additional resources besides RAFT and IRMA available for homeowners? But I also want to let people know that many, over 80 communities in the state have enacted their own emergency rental and sometimes mortgage assistance programs for their own communities. And they're using their own community dollars to help residents of their community. So that may be something that you also want to look at. It's usually limited. It may not be as much as RAFT, but there are communities trying to help community members, particularly renters. So Amy, besides RAFT and IRMA, are there other things available for homeowners? I also want to plug there's property tax deferral programs for homeowners that many municipalities have that pre-COVID existed as well. Amy?
In terms of direct state assistance, not at this time. However, every mortgage that is federally backed, and I understand that that's about 70% of mortgages, are able to request a forbearance or deferral under the CARES Act. And if you don't know if you have one of those mortgages, because it's not obvious, you can look that up or just call your mortgage holder and say, you know, I'm having trouble. Can I request a forbearance or deferral and talk and say, is there anything I'm entitled to under the CARES Act, and go from there.
Great. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So this has been a lot of information, I realize. We will be sending out the presentations as well as all the links. And there are lots and lots of flyers and websites around particularly the Eviction Diversion Initiative that we will send out. If you are not on our listserv, please drop an email to seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. And we will also be looking forward to talking to you all in November. So thank you for spending the hour with us. Take care. We'll talk to you later.